The following is an encore presentation of the Donalana Kitchen. In this time of COVID-19, stay safe, be kind, wash your hands, and eat good food, and enjoy life. Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we gather around our kitchen table here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in Ames, Iowa. The center of Iowa, the center of it all. We have a good time doing this show. Well, here we are in the middle of summer. Actually, maybe kind of over the hump of summer.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking yesterday, boy, this has gone fast as
usual.
It
certainly has, and we've had our Iowa weather events and probably more to come, and it's been hot, and now today's beautiful, and we always talk about the weather. Yes, we do, because it has a lot to do with what goes on growing outside. So if you have a garden, a big one, a little one, midsummer can be really busy. Everything happens at once. And
The labor are coming.
Right? The fruits, and you go out there and you harvest things one day, you turn around, and there it is again. So I've been busy, and other gardeners are very busy this time of year, and that's good. That's good. So Donna and I took a road trip recently to visit a farmer in Des Moines, and we mean in Des Moines. Dog Patch Urban Gardens is a farm, and it's in Des Moines, Donna. I don't believe it.
Yeah, it's a nice little suburban neighborhood.
Ah. They specialize in annuals, in annual veggies and salad greens. They grow with natural organic principles. And they have an on-farm retail space. Oh, they have an Airbnb. They have they do the Des Moines Farmers Market. And they do a lot of things. So the person that kind of put this all together, Dog Patch Urban Gardens, is the work of Jenny Quiner, and yes, she's busy. Welcome, Jenny, to the Donalana Kitchen.
Thanks for having me.
Good, good. When we visited your farm last week, and it was just right off of Merle Hay Road, it was just really amazed to drive up, and there's a farm happening there. What a good place for a farm. Jenny was overseeing the delivery of two really big greenhouses. So she's out there telling the truck where to back up and supervising guys moving things around. There's a lot of things going on, and that was just the latest of them. Jenny, tell us about your farm, when it started, how big it is. Well, how did you get started?
Yeah, so we are on our seventh season of growing. Prior to farming, I was a high school science teacher at Dowling Catholic High School. I taught there for 6 years, and I taught science and loved it. I'm an alumni from there, so it's good to be back home. But in those 6 years teaching, my husband and I had our three little boys. And as you know, having kids can really change life, and it really, kind of changed my perspective. And I felt like my heart wasn't in teaching as much as it should be to stay in that profession. So, as I was kind of feeling pulled in a different direction, I was teaching environmental science and had a deep love for when we talked about local food. And, you know, had this idea, like told my husband, hey, let's homestead our backyard because we have a small acreage. And he's like, no, I really want green grass. And so we just kind of like spitballed ideas of what we could do. And then the property where our farm is went for sale by owner in our neighborhood. So we live two blocks from the farm. And my husband sells real estate, so he says we bought the house with some land. I say we bought some land with a house, and it all just kind of snowballed from there. I mean, our vision 7 years ago is not what we thought it would be today, and our business has evolved and changed quite a bit. And I say that in a good way, because we have an idea, we roll with it, we see where the demand is, what our customers want, and then we're constantly evolving to fit the needs of our community.
How big is the space? How big is the farm?
So the property that we have our main farm on, it's 1 acre of land. And on that acre, we have the Airbnb. We have our farm store, which we call the farm stand. And then we actually grow on, I would say, about a fourth of acre of an acre is actually under cultivation there. And then across the way, we lease land from a homeowner. Her property is 2 acres in size. We're farming on about half of an acre over there. And then in October, we purchased the parking lot, and that's really between the property we own and the land we lease. And the parking lot is roughly an acre and a half. Now, as you saw, most of that is cement. You know, it's a concrete jungle.
That didn't look very tillable there, Jenny.
Exactly. And we're not trying to rip up that cement. We're basically going to be putting 2 greenhouses up to do, you know, the big focus will be spring plant sales, you know, annual, perennial plants for people to buy and plant in their own home. But then we can also use that space for pumpkins, mums, fall decor, Christmas trees, and we just see a great opportunity to expand our business into more of a year-round operation.
Well, it was really fun to visit. I had been reading about you on your website and through Practical Farmers of Iowa and things like that, and I kept trying to imagine, what does this place look like, you know? So Lana and I had to come down for a visit, and when we get there, first of all, it looks like a lot of happy accidents, basically. Oh, let's try this, and let's do that. But what I was really thrilled to see is it was all so pragmatically done. And for me, it looks like an exploration of how to, in fact, do local food systems that are, especially because it's urban. I mean, if Des Moines had 5 or 6 of these, it would make a huge dent.
Or 20 or 100.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like this.
But Jenny, I have to tell our listeners, she's like a person who my mother would say, Jenny probably has a frog in every pocket. You're doing a lot of things. And we were going to try and talk about some of them. And also, obviously, since you've been doing it for 7 years, you're trying things to see what is popular, what makes it financially feasible. And so you've come up with a lot of innovations.
Yes. Tell us many things. So obviously you want to contact, besides growing things, you want to contact with your customers. You go knocking on doors. How do customers find you?
No, we don't go knocking on doors. And I think initially we did 2 really pretty hyper-local farmers markets. So we did the Beaverdale Farmers Market and we did the Johnston Market. So in the first couple of years, that was, you know, just a way to get into the community, introduce ourselves to pretty much our key clientele and let them know what we're doing. So the markets were big. Also, we had some very good press. You know, there's, for example, the Des Moines Register picked us up as like a person to watch and, I don't know, it was like a few years back, you know, so when you get your face on the front page of the Register, those sorts of things help. And frankly, we have a neat feel good story. So when I reach out to press and say, hey, we're doing XYZ and it's got a positive spin, half the time they're like, thank you. You know, we want to tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a woman run urban farm growing organic food for the community, people want to hear about it.
And you're very photogenic, you and your farm.
Yeah, it's the whole setup is quite attractive. We loved the farm store.
Yes.
And it was really, that was where we started first because, you have all of these Midwestern generated products. So I'm looking, oh, what about this? And what about that? And you've got stuff from Kansas City, things that every locality has some ambitious people trying to do these things, but you have a really nice curated collection. And also in there, you have your commercial kitchen. And now what I thought was very interesting, is you are not trying to grow all of this yourself. You tell me if I've misunderstood this, but it seems like you produce a lot of lettuces and flowers, basically.
Yeah, no, that's correct. When we started, we were growing a more diversity of crops. And over time, we figured out, 1, what our customer demand is, and 2, what makes the most sense for us in terms of labor and, you know, the financial aspect of running the business. So what we've discovered is salad greens are our key market. You know, we're kind of in that niche world of like salads are our thing. We sell a shirt that just says salad, you know, and so I'll take on the salad woman role any day of the week. So greens are our key market product. And then we also do tomatoes. You know, this time of year, tomatoes are fantastic. And then, like you mentioned, flowers. So this is our first year doing fresh cut flowers.
Oh.
Our initial plan was to offer a you-pick flower farm, with the idea of, you know, bringing people to the farm, having an experience of picking your own bouquets. And that's what we envisioned. But what's happening is we're harvesting to make bouquets to sell at our farm store in the downtown farmers market. And we're selling out of all the bouquets we bring. So we don't have enough blooms to do you-pick. So it's pretty eye-opening, and we're realizing that there is a demand for more of the flower world. And so next year we'll probably expand into that even more.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I have to talk about your lettuce because, of course, we bought a bag, and it looked beautiful, and you have multiple mixtures. And I brought it home, and I thought, oh, yeah, it's time for a salad. Oh, it is really good. This is real lettuce. I should have known by looking at your growing methodologies, but you know, this is not hydroponic. This is not like grown in some greenhouse. It really tastes like lettuce. It has a flavor. It's not just there to put some green on the plate and hold up the salad dressing. It's really what lettuce tastes like. You know, and you're doing it in the middle of a very hot summer. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, that's, you know, and like I said, that's our niche for our farm, and growing greens in the summer is not easy. And there's a reason why most people don't do it because, they naturally want to bolt and go to seed and get bitter. But we put the time and energy into the right methods when it comes to proper irrigation, proper soil fertility, use of shade cloth. So it's a lot more work to have success with greens in the summer, but you know, when you go to downtown Des Moines Farmers Market and you look at produce booths, there's not many salad greens. So we have a good niche in the market this time of year for that.
That's fantastic. And I think maybe having a smaller space, it always, it's a challenge, but it's also an opportunity because you end up, you use every corner and things are covered and things are irrigated and it looks like things are well in order. There's no room to waste things there. Tell me about some of the methods for keeping lettuce kind of happy in August. I mean, I noticed you have covers on things. Well, tell us about that.
Yeah, so the cover you saw is probably the shade cloth.
It's blackish.
Yep, exactly. So it's black, lightweight fabric that just literally puts shade over the greens. And our process is this time of year, we only transplant lettuce. We don't direct seed it because it's too hot for it to germinate. So we actually currently have a setup in my basement where we start all of our seeds, and we can't wait to get our greenhouse so we don't have to, you know, have that operation in my home. But we transplant, and we only transplant in the morning. So this time of year, once it turns about 8 a.m., if you're still trying to transplant, you're in trouble. Because once that sun comes out, the greens aren't happy. So early morning transplant, and as we're transplanting, we're running our drip irrigation to keep the soil nice and moist and to cool off the greens. The second we're done transplanting, we put that shade cloth on, and we leave that on for roughly 2 weeks. We've experimented with leaving it on longer, and what happens is the greens, like the heads of them, they start to stretch and get kind of leggy because they're reaching for that sunlight. And so there's a sweet spot. If you leave the shade on too long, then you don't get nice, lush heads.
Very good.
So, and you're selling all of the lettuce that you can produce basically at farmers markets and in your own store.
Correct. So this time of year, farmers market and our store, we're able to move everything we grow. We do offer, it's called a salad subscription, and it's kind of our modified version of a CSA. And we do that for 12 weeks in the spring and then 12 weeks in the fall. So our fall session starts at the end of August and it runs until, like, I believe the first week before Thanksgiving.
So you're able to capture the full retail price of the lettuce.
Yep. Yep, definitely. We used to have restaurant accounts here in town where, you know, we'd sell wholesale for, you know, a cheaper price per pound. But we love working with chefs and establishing those relationships. But what we found is we don't have enough land to meet the demand of everyone. And so if something's got to give, it's the wholesale accounts for us currently.
Well, and you've also developed salad dressings to go on the salad greens. And I have a bottle here. It says, eat salad, be well. Lemon, garlic, vinaigrette. And I have to tell you, I am, you know, because I'm a chef, I'm not really a bottled salad dressing person. But, you know, I thought, well, we got to try this and see. It's really good, Jenny. It's really nice.
Thank you.
Did you say that this is going to be in Hy-Vee stores in the Des Moines area?
Yeah, so they're on the shelves right now. We got picked up by Hy-Vee about a year ago.
Oh.
And so they're throughout the Des Moines metro. They're in Ames. They're really, so our initial order was like 130 Hy-Vee stores throughout the region. It was a big order. It was a shock. And it was exciting. And frankly, I'm sure we've fallen off some of the shelves because our product is kind of a higher end healthy dressing. It usually at Hy-Vee, it retails for about $6.99. And what we found is in like the really small town Hy-Vee's, Kraft Ranch is the key dressing that people want, and they don't want an avocado vinaigrette, which is fine. So what we're really figuring out what our key customers and clientele are in the Hy-Vee stores and doing in-store demos, and we have a sales rep that's really monitoring those key stores for us to keep the movement going. And we're seeing a lot of great sales.
So to get this manufactured in that kind of quantity, you've like created a whole nother business basically, right?
Essentially, yes. Yeah. So all of the initial recipes are created in our commercial kitchen at the farm. And once we've come up with a recipe that we love, a lot of times we'll trial it with either our CSA members or do some small batch things at farmers market to kind of see where the demand is and if people like it. And then if we're happy with them, we can scale them up. And when we're ready to scale, we work with a co-packer in Ankeny, and they're called Midwest Foods.
Oh, yeah.
They're known for, they do the Geno's products.
Mm-hmm.
And so we connected with them, basically went to them and said, hey,
how do we do this?
Hy-Vee account. Yeah. And we kind of had the chicken or the egg conundrum because Hy-Vee picked us up and we weren't really ready to scale as much as we expected with them. There's no way we could, you know, do thousands of bottles and palletize and all that at our farm. So, but luckily we had the relationship with Midwest Foods. They hit the ground running with our three dressings. So it's a lemon garlic vinaigrette, a balsamic vinaigrette, and maple ginger vinaigrette. Those are the three on the shelves, and they mass produce them all. And then, gosh, in like 2 weeks, we'll have a zesty Italian vinaigrette. And then we have finalized an apple cider vinaigrette as well, and we'll launch that in the fall.
Wow, this is a serious, and they're all shelf stable. So this is
correct.
And what makes your product stand out is that you're only using avocado oil, which is a really light, clean oil. I mean, it's I of course usually if I make my dressings, I use olive oil, but most packaged products that you buy in the grocery store use certainly less expensive oils, which is, as far as I'm concerned, taste-wise and texture-wise, that's the problem. A lot of times those oils are, well, they're cheap and they're not that healthy maybe. But so this salad dressing, and I'm looking at the lemon garlic vinaigrette, has avocado oil and then, and it's sweetened with honey, which of course probably is really good for the mainstream palate. So this is, I would eat this.
You have.
I have. Good job.
It's good.
Yeah, you know, our goal with these dressings is to keep salads healthy. Because, you know, you're eating a salad, you think you're making a smart nutritional choice, but then a lot of times you put on dressings that have so many unnecessary calories and, you know, added sugars, dairy, and so on, where it turns into what you think you're eating healthy is actually not good for you.
Yeah.
And so we're just trying to, one, increase awareness and make a better product for, have better options for consumers to still maintain health with their salads.
Well, and it's also, although it doesn't really have your farm ingredients in it, it's name brand recognition and it's may end up supporting the whole thing, right?
Exactly. I mean, they all flow together, and you know, you can think about these, they're sitting on the shelf, and these were inspired by a salad farmer, not just some person in a lab with a white coat that's formulating these ingredients.
Real people who eat, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Good. And you went, Donna talked about the commercial kitchen on your place, which opens a lot of possibilities, and you said you got a chef on staff too, so that's a handy thing to have. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Chef Jacob, he joined our team during COVID. So obviously COVID was a unique year for many small businesses, and we shut down our farm stand but offered everything online with pre-sales, and then we'd do like a contactless pickup where you'd drive through on Saturday, we'd assembly line your goods and put them in your trunk. And it worked really well, and Jacob started to create these grab-and-go meals as well. So we do fun things like different chia puddings and soups and different hummuses, and that was really popular during the COVID lockdown time. He also would help with the dressings in the kitchen, and he would get really creative. So let's say we're long on summer squash, he'd make zoodles and then make some sort of grab-and-go that featured the zoodle. So it was neat to see his creativity also eliminate food waste and, you know, get to our consumers. So that was fantastic. But what we noticed is once the world started to open back up and people felt more comfortable going to the grocery store, the sales of our grab-and-go items started to decrease. And we loved Jacob, and it wasn't like, okay, we're done, you know. So we talked, and we figured out ways to still keep him as a part of our team. And so now he comes in, and he creates small-batch salad dressings for our CSA members. And so they get unique dressings that aren't available to everyone else. And then he'll make extras that we can sell at the stand in the market as well, too. So that's kind of been what he specialized in.
Good. And you also have, that you make at your place and for sale at your store, herb salts and elderberry syrup and other stuff?
Yes. Yeah. So the elderberry syrup is a product I started creating during the wintertime, you know, when obviously a lot of sales for produce is slowed down, but there's a higher demand for elderberry syrup in the winter because it has a lot of immune boosting qualities. And so I really tapped into that market. And I personally make that in our kitchen right now. And it's got a 3-month shelf life because it requires refrigeration. And I'm experimenting with some new formulations that would allow it to be shelf stable, that would allow us once again to start scaling that up. But it's a very popular product that our customers really love.
Well, where do you get your elderberries?
So we used to harvest them around the neighborhood because a lot of people in the dog patch have them, but we basically grew out of that. So we get organic berries from Frontier Co-op out in eastern Iowa.
Oh, and do they come dried or fresh?
They're dried. Yep, they come dried.
Oh, so then you could be baking this in the middle of the winter and everything.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Good idea. I was amazed at how full your store is. Besides fresh vegetables, you got meat and you've got cheeses and all kinds of stuff in the cooler. Just guess how many growers and makers bring stuff to your store. There's a lot of things on the shelf.
Yeah. So we recently switched over our website, and as we were making that transition, we had like 600 SKUs that went from one website to the next. So it gives you a general idea. Now that's probably, you know, it changes and it ebbs and flows, but we have a lot of diversified products. And when the store started, I was really adamant on like only Iowa made, only Iowa grown. But what I've found out is there are great companies, for example, in Kansas City, mm-hmm. in the Twin Cities, in Omaha, that have similar philosophies, that are, you know, small brand that really are trying to make an impact. And I want to support them as well. And so now we have more of a regional reach, you know, pretty close here to the state of Iowa. But it's fun to be offering new products to our consumers that align with who we are and what we believe in.
And how do you get them? Is there a distribution system, or they have to drop it in the mail, or how do you get it?
It's a wide variety. So we work with some distributors. We work with one based in the Twin Cities called Co-op Partners Warehouse, and they deliver to us once once or twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
We work with Farm Table Delivery, which is based in Harlan, Iowa, mm-hmm. and they work with a lot of growers and producers strictly in the state. There's also a wholesale website called Faire, F-A-I-R-E, and basically you can just order through Faire. The producer then ships it to you at a wholesale rate. So mm-hmm. there's lots of different ways to find products. And we have local people that reach out and say, hey, for example, we just recently got a new kombucha on the shelf, and they personally deliver to us. So there's a mix of different ways that we get the product.
Wonderful. We're talking to Jenny Kleiner, and there's so much more to talk about. We're talking about Dog Patch Urban Gardens in Des Moines. Lots of good things happening down there. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking to Jenny Kleiner. Lots of good things happening at her farm.
The Urban Dog Patch Farm. Did I say that right? What?
Dog Patch Urban.
Dog Patch Urban. Okay. Anyway, it's pretty cool. One thing that I had read about in advance that, of course, we didn't get to see was your farm-to-table dinners. So tell us how that happened. Why they're completely sold out, why you don't do more of them.
So the dinners came on board about 4 years ago, and this all happened because when we initially built the farm, we didn't have a commercial kitchen, mm-hmm. but about 3 years in, we did some remodeling. We had to add some bathrooms, and in that process, as we're running electrical and plumbing, we're like, we should probably just add the kitchen now. You know, we didn't necessarily know the big picture plan with it, but it just kind of made sense to have that.
Well, it's kind of an expensive item.
It is, but we really saw the value in value-added products. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. just to give you a little context, like as a grower, I can sell you a whole tomato, and there's not a whole lot of regulations with it. But the second I slice it, that's considered processed food, and you have to slice it in a certified commercial kitchen. And so if we, you know, wanted to be able to value-add our products, we wanted that kitchen. So That's where it all came into fruition. And now that we have this kitchen space, we're like, we should start hosting dinners. Because we have a great relationship with a lot of local chefs. Like I said, we sell to them. We used to sell to them. They're just a big part of our mission and our community as well. And so we launched and we do four dinners a season. And yes, they sell out fast. The reason we don't do more. One, it's a big event.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like hosting a wedding, just with all of the background
and
stuff that you're doing.
How many diners do you usually have?
Yep. So we serve between 36 to 40.
Uh-huh.
And if we knew the weather was going to cooperate, we could host more people, but we have to keep it in that number because, like, for example, we just had a dinner on Sunday and we had a downpour, but luckily we set the dinners up inside. And so it was okay, and everyone fit. But if we have any more than that sweet spot of 40, then we can't all fit inside as our, you know.
You had them in the store?
Yes. So last Sunday, we had Chef James from Lua Brewing. He was our featured chef. And during the day, we're like kind of going back and forth. Do we do it outside? Do we do it inside? But it was like 90s and humid. And so we're like, you know what? It probably won't rain because it never rains anymore, right? So, but we'll do it inside anyway, just because of the heat.
Yeah.
You know, when you're sitting in sun at 6 p.m. trying to enjoy a meal, it can be tough. So we had three tables in the farm store, but then we had two tables in our Airbnb. So we, the guest left Saturday or Sunday morning. We said, let's shotgun, get that ready. So it was kind of cool. It was a different dynamic for the dinners. So as we're getting ready to serve, the rain starts pouring down and we're all actually like laughing and high-fiving because we're actually getting rain and we're staying dry. So
good call, Jenny. Good call.
Tell me what was the menu like?
Yeah, so it was, we had five courses. Mm-hmm. So it started with apps. He did a beef tartare, hummus and a cucumber, and like a salmon mousse. So there were apps at each individual table. Mm-hmm. The first course was a gazpacho. Then, oh, you put me on the spot. What else did we have? Then it was a salmon tomato dish. Then we did, the main dish was a lamb with like a creamed sweet corn and peppers.
Mm.
The dessert was a berry cobbler. There's one whole dish I'm forgetting. Oh, a peach burrata as well, too.
Oh!
So,
and who was the chef?
So his name is James Arbaugh, and he works at Lua Brewery, which is in Des Moines. It's in the Sherman Hill neighborhood. I think it's been around for about 3 years. So it's kind of a newer restaurant to Des Moines. It's a craft brewery, and then he does these amazing small plates, and it was fantastic.
Oh, good.
So how do you pick the chefs that you do for your four annual spots?
Yeah, so one, we want to have a relationship with them or know of them in the community. Mm-hmm. We tend to go to the chefs that support local farms. They tend mm-hmm. to be smaller, locally owned restaurants. Generally, they're the white tablecloth type restaurant. You know, we're not going to Applebee's and
right.
saying, hey, you want to be our chef. So
yeah, they don't really have chefs at Applebee's anyway,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. So there's really, gosh, I would say a rotation of like 10 key chefs that mm-hmm. we kind of work through. And that's fun. And now I'm trying to get creative a little bit, and maybe we pull in some chefs from, you know, Ames or a little bit farther away to help introduce them to the area as well. That's something I'm thinking about for next Ooh, season.
What a good idea. I want to mention, if it doesn't rain, and we do have beautiful days here in Iowa, I noticed when we visited, you pointed out that there is a really nice grassy space that you can set up outside. And there's a picture on your website of a long, long table, people outside in the greenery enjoying themselves. These farm-to-table dinners sound lovely.
I'm trying to picture it. So do you keep your own table linens and glasses and chairs and stuff? Oh, you're equipped.
Yeah, so we have all of the tablewares. We purchased a bunch of chairs from a local restaurant that was selling them. So we just decided if we're going to do four of these a year, we don't want to deal with renting all of these.
It takes all the profit out of it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So we made the initial investment. And so now it's our property that we own. Now you just have to have a place to store it.
If you have this new greenhouse on cement, mm-hmm. would that be a place you might also have dinners? Whether
it could be, yeah.
Oh boy,
it's something that we've talked about. The tricky part would be transporting, you know, a nice plate from the kitchen
across
the street, to the greenhouse.
Right.
Well, but you already took them to the Airbnb, so
exactly. Where we could figure it out if need be.
Yeah,
I bet you could. Oh nice! Wonderful. I want to get back to fun stuff in your stores. Don and I went in there, we shopped, and we picked something off the shelf that neither of us have had. And
I said, "Oh, look, it's pickled grapes from Kansas City."
Oh, yeah.
I have not eaten pickled grapes, so we bought a jar and came home and opened it up, and yes, it's grapes that are pickled.
It is, and I was okay. I was eating my grapes there, and I thought, Donna, what in the world, besides sitting here eating them out of the jar, what in the world would you use these for? And the first thing that came to my mind, and you can tell where my mind goes, I was going to skewer it with a little plastic sword and put it in a martini. That's what I do with it. But what would you do with it, Donna?
Oh, well, I was thinking of cheese plate or, you know, hors d'oeuvre plate or something. Although they could easily be a condiment like on a nice Iowa pork chop. You know, that sweet and sour kind of fruity thing that we all love to do with pork and things like that. Lana went to the local library and found a book yesterday with a pickled black grape recipe.
Just so happened to have pickled black grapes in it. The one I got it at the Dog Patch store, it was balsamic vinegar, so it was lovely and dark. And this pickled grape recipe has got apple cider vinegar, brown sugar, ginger, cardamom, cinnamon, three bay leaves. So it's got a slightly different thing, but we open up our mind to new tastes.
Well, but you know what, wonderful. Though? It reminded me, especially with this recipe, my grandmother's recipe for pickled peaches, right?
Huh?
Ginger. She always, and this was German, right? She always had ginger in her pickled peaches. So this is new, but not so new, and maybe we'll have to make some pickled grapes this season.
That's one thing about the kind of growers and makers and producers that you can deal with. They're coming up with amazing things in your store. Donna pulled something off the shelf. It was cotton candy, but it was made out of...
I don't know, Jenny. I saw that, and I have to say I didn't buy it because I don't love cotton candy, but tell us about that product.
Yeah, so that's from Great River Maple, and they are a maple syrup producer here in the state of Iowa, which isn't super common. I think they're northeast, but don't quote me on that. I'm like second guessing where exactly in the state they're located. But we've sold their maple syrup for years, and they're like, hey, we have this new product. You want to try it? So, and I'm right there with you. I'm not a huge cotton candy person, but it is maple sugar cotton candy.
Well, when I had young children, of course, I was trying to keep them off the sugar all the time. So I would have welcomed that product because it, you know, I mean, come on. At some point in their lives, a child has to have cotton candy. So this, but also to see it in a shelf-stable packaging, it's like maybe a 6x8 kind of envelope thing with a piece of cotton candy, you know? I mean, maybe like a giant marshmallow-ish kind of thing. Is that what it tastes like?
To be honest with you, I've never had it.
You don't need it either. You don't feed it to your kids, Jenny?
Well, we haven't yet. They don't even like cotton candy. They want to act like they do, and then they complain that they're sticky and their stomach hurts. <You know?
laughs> there's a learning curve there. Yes, there is. What are some of the favorite things in your store? What do the customers ask for?
You know, so products that are not from us, the eggs. Everybody wants farm fresh eggs. Prairie Breeze cheese from Milton Creamery.
Of course.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't go wrong there. We have a lot of Picket Fence Creamery products, and mm-hmm. their ice cream this time of year is mm-hmm. a big seller. We work with Brookwood Farms, and they have some sauces and barbecue sauces. They're known for their pork, but they have some sauces that have been really popular for us as well. A lot of different drinks that we're constantly experimenting with.
Oh, I noticed your kombucha cooler is like full. It's amazing.
Yep. That's a little selfish because I love kombucha. So it's like a way for me to try new varieties. And I'm like, well, if people don't like them, I'll drink it. So.
Oh, very good.
Now, you don't have an alcohol license, do you?
Correct. We do not.
Okay.
We actually applied for one, and we got denied because of our location near a church. And it was one of those things like, okay, like we're not going to fight
right.
that.
You don't need to go that direction.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. even for your farm-to-table dinners, no alcohol?
Or
no, actually, we can work with the local chef and piggyback on their license.
Oh, then it's a separate thing. Okay.
Oh, yep. So, okay. Yep.
Ah, lovely. Speaking of urban, or the fact that you are you're surrounded by suburbs. And, mm-hmm. Growers, a lot of vegetable growers out here in the fields of Iowa, we have to deal with things like pesticide drift and, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. Are there any urban challenges? I mean, are the things that happen in the neighborhood there that you, here it comes. Is there something you have to watch out for there?
Well, I would, you mentioned pesticide drift. I don't think that's nearly as big of a concern for us because we don't have, crop dusters flying over next door to us, and we're worried about that. So that's not a huge concern. We've dealt with regulations and with, like, planning and zoning because our property is zoned residential. Ah. And when we started the business, it was kind of like we're in Polk County, and they honestly didn't really know what to do with us. They're like, well, yeah, you can grow food. That's fine. But our storefront kind of was perplexing for them because, that's a commercial business enterprise. But we had some hiccups, but worked through that. And with our new parking lot where the greenhouses are going up, we were able to get that rezoned to commercial. So we learned that process.
Right. Why would there have been a parking lot if it was not commercial?
Well, so it was owned by a church. And so technically, so there's all these funny little ins and outs of how all that zoning worked. Mm-hmm. So we did have to get it rezoned. And the county worked with us, so we feel good about that. So as we're building these commercial buildings, we're doing it up to code and we're doing it the right way. So it's just kind of a breath of fresh air to know we're doing it right and that we have the support of our county too.
Did I see deer fencing in certain places?
Oh, everywhere. So deer are horrible for us.
Urban deer.
It's really bad. So our neighborhood is known as the Dog Patch, and that's where the name comes from. But the Dog Patch neighborhood is heavily wooded, and there's a waterway that kind of goes through the neighborhood as well. So it's a prime spot for deer to hang out. Just today I was harvesting. I have a plot at my home, and I probably had 50% yield because the deer took about half of the head lettuce. So it's a constant struggle. We have 8-foot chain link fence and that works great, but that's not cheap. And so for the land that we lease, we have some electric fence and it kind of works. So, you wake up every morning with fingers crossed the deer didn't just destroy a whole bed of romaine, but that's where we're at right now.
This seems to be a really critter filled year. I've had more deer and bunny damage this year than I have. And I'm sure the deer ate my first tomatoes that were coming because it was too high for the bunnies. I mean, it was
Yeah.
But why do deer like tomatoes? They have plenty of other things to eat.
Because you grow really good tomatoes. Come on.
Well, nice to know. Yeah.
You're not alone. And, what they would do to our tomato plants is they'd take a green one, take a bite, spit it out because they didn't like it, take a different green one, take a bite, spit it out, and it's like,
at least clean your plate. Oh, dear. I want to remind folks, this is KHOI, and listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. And if you want to find out more about KHOI, go to khoifm.org. You can find out more about this fine community radio station. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking to Jenny from Dog Patch Urban Gardens. I want to, I kind of keep my eye open for news items and things that are happening. And I got a little thing about farmers using robotic exoskeletons to help them lift things. And there's a great picture of a couple in Japan harvesting leeks and friends, they say these two people in they have a farm. They harvest up to 45 tons of leeks each year. So anything could help them along. They're both wearing back backpack looking things that kind of clamp around their legs. So lifting and carrying or squatting, evidently farmers are trying this thing out. You work in a very physical environment.
You know, I've seen it and I'm impressed with it. It's actually pretty neat what farmers in Japan create. They're really innovative with the market garden community, and even some of my tools that I use are
oh, I saw in the store you're selling those Japanese knives. I have one of those, and it is my single most favorite gardening tool.
Very good. So you've got greenhouses. What's the difference between a greenhouse and a hoop house?
My key difference when I articulate it is the greenhouse will be heated. Our hoop house, or I also call it a high tunnel, does not have a heat structure to it.
Ah, very good. Very good.
Yep.
So,
speaking of heated, tell us about your seasonality, basically, here in Iowa winters. What are you doing?
Three seasons? Four seasons? You mentioned you are taking time off. Good for you. How long can you do things?
This season we will be harvesting pretty much. We have our crops planned basically harvest through Christmas, or, you know, serve people for Christmas, mm-hmm. and then we'll take a break. We can fill our high tunnel with spinach, and we can keep harvesting that through the winter as long as the spinach is established. But this season, like you mentioned, we're going to kind of slow down this winter so that we can shift gears and focus on the new greenhouses and the new business enterprise, because in spring of 2023, we will launch with a big plant sale. So when we open our doors back up, we'll have, you know, a greenhouse full of bustling, organically grown plants for our community. And there's a lot to kind of ingest and take on with that. So taking a slight break from the growing, and also from the farm store, it's kind of what I need to wrap my brain around everything for the new part of the business.
Well, Lana does that. She has a greenhouse at her house.
Not on the scale
that you do, but it's, you do provide seedlings in the spring for a large part of our community, because you're growing things that, you know, you can't just go like to another local greenhouse and buy what are some of the things that we can't live without? Oh, the
Thai basil.
Yeah, Thai basil is not really easy
lemon
to find.
Basil.
And Lovage. Lana and I are big. We are big advocates for Lovage. I don't know why people don't grow it, because once you get it started in the ground, it's a perennial here. I cook everything with Lovage. It's that we love the Lovage. So I hope you'll be growing really interesting seedlings, right?
Yeah, you know, and year one, there's a lot to figure out. Where I'm going to start with what I think customers want and where I think the demand is, and then we'll see. You know, if the following year I need to add more heirloom tomato varieties, I will. And what's tricky is, you know, you talk to greenhouse owners and they're like, well, one year we sold out of this, and then the next year no one bought it. You know, so you always anticipate what the needs are, but you can never really fully know.
Yeah, when your Lee's Greens started chervil plants. Now, I love chervil. You never see it in Iowa. Most people don't even know what it is. It's a little frilly herb that you can't dry it. It loses its flavor, kind of like cilantro, but it doesn't taste like cilantro. So I think I was the only person in town that bought those plants. And we even promoted it on the radio. Still, nobody bought them.
Well, goodness. Well, good. Best of luck with figuring out what people want.
If you happen to grow chervil, Ginny, I will drive all the way down to buy the plants.
You know.
Okay.
Oh, good, good. Just in a short time we have left, talk about your farm team. How many people do all of these wonderful things with you?
Yeah, we have, it's not just this really easy answer of like, oh, we have so many people on our crew, because it varies based on the season. So currently, I have one other full-time employee. So I'm full-time, and then I have another woman farmer, and she has really taken on a lot of the role in the field. And her passion is also flowers. So the flower enterprise is kind of her little baby. So we have Stephanie, and then we have Leah, who she's part-time, and she's an art teacher at a local elementary school. So this is actually her last week. So she does a lot in the farm store, and then when the store's slow or, you know, no one's in there, she'll go help in the fields when she can. Then we have Shelley, who's also part-time, and she helps in the store and then also helps with behind-the-scenes things like bagging greens and washing bins and some of those types of tasks that people don't realize you still need to do. We had a guy that helped us with the farmer's market, and he's now going to Australia. He just graduated high school, so he's, I think, leaving this week. Then we have a couple independent contractors. So, you know, I've got a bookkeeper. I have our chef, Jacob. I have a woman who does our sales reps in the Hy-Vee stores.
That's a whole woman job, does, yeah.
Yep. I have a woman who demos our salad dressings in local Hy-Vees and, like, small food co-ops as well. So we have a pretty diversified team that ebbs and flows. We have people that help serve at our farm-to-table dinners. So there's a lot of community around what
Fantastic.
We're doing with our farm team.
Well, this is kind of a silly question, but do you have a dog at Dog Patch Urban Gardens?
So we are dog owners. We are dog lovers. Currently we have June, and she is a 1-year-old corgi, and we got her last October, and she has been like the mascot at the farm because corgi puppies are adorable. So I would bring her to the farm as much as I could just so people could get their snuggles in. Now that she's a year, she's a little more ornery, I'd say. So she's not at the farm as much. But we have customers that walk in and they're like, where's June? So
three,
I think people
three
are coming for her
dogs.
Instead.
Three cheers
oh,
for
yeah.
dogs. We have a farm corgi too. I mean, it
oh, nice.
You have to. And yes. Talk about being customer magnets. They're pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you came and talked with us. Are you happy where Dog Patch Urban Gardens is now? And is it going to keep growing?
Yeah. So, I mean, growing is just part of our business. You know,
there you go.
Literally and figuratively. So the answer to that is yes. We're very happy with the farm where it's at, but also with the future and where it's heading. We think these greenhouses are really going to allow us to grow the business that makes sense for us. You know, and as we're, and I say we because I'm talking about my husband and I, he works as a realtor, but he's also a major part of the behind the scenes of the farm. And, you know, we think about how we're busy and, you know, we got a lot going on, but we also have three little boys and we can't, they're more important than this business, you know? And so we're trying to figure out how we can manage it all and make it work for our family. And we feel like we're getting to a comfortable point by having a great team, but also this new enterprise, we envision our boys helping out with it more. In our heads, they're in a few years going to have a snow cone stand that they run in the summers, you know? And so we're just like articulating ways that they're a bigger part of this business as well, too.
Fantastic.
So what farmers markets do you sell at currently?
The downtown Des Moines Farmers Market on Saturdays is our only farmers market that we go to. Ah. And then the big goal is to bring people to us at the farm store.
Good okay. idea. Good idea. Give us your website and go ahead.
Yeah. So our website is dogpatchurbangardens.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, and I also send a weekly newsletter every Saturday morning. I hit your inbox with just what's happening at the farm, recipe ideas. Our customers really enjoy the newsletter, and you can sign up for that through our website.
Well, thank you. Good, Jenny Quiner, a good person to know. Thank you for being with us.
We loved visiting your farm. Thanks a lot, Jenny.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
Thanks for having me today too.
Good. Well, our pleasure.
Good. This is our show, the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, is available as a podcast now.
And you can find it by going to wherever you get your podcasts and typing in Donna Lana, which is one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, Kitchen, and you will find us in podcast format.
Great. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Today we had music by the Barn Owl Band. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.